Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I am joined by my brother, Barney. How you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, good, mate. I've started getting back into the five-a-side football. Starting to play pretty regularly now. One thing nice. I was going to ask you, how early... So my game's at 8 o'clock in the evening. I generally don't eat. I wait till I come back. But then This week I was having to cook pasta for my daughter. This is about 5 p.m. So I thought, 5 p.m., it's kicking off at 8. I'll get some pasta down me.
Perfect.
It was not perfect. It just sat so badly. I just felt rotten. I played so bad. I just feared it. My sort of creeping up as if it was going to come back out. It was just, disaster.
Did it affect your performance?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was dreadful. I had probably one of the worst five-side goalkeeping performances that the world's ever seen. A little 10-minute stint just though.
But you used to be a goalkeeper. I find that
this
very
is what I
believe.
Said. I said, I don't know what's going on. I was dreadful. It was calamitous. It was horrible.
Yeah. What can you do? No, I always play in the morning. I always find that I eat just a little bit of something in the morning, just so I'm not completely running on empty, but I don't eat loads, and then play football for like an hour and a half. And then I finish at about 11 o'clock and I'm starving, and I just eat about 5,000 calories straight after to celebrate doing 1 hour of exercise.
I was trying to remember, I could have sworn I heard players talking about if they've got a midday kickoff, they'll be sometimes having pasta at 9 or 10 in the morning. I'm sure that's true.
I also swear that it came out on Twitter recently that the Portugal national team players' request. I wish I had this to hand. It was leaked what they request before a match, and I swear to God, someone like Bruno Fernandes was eating a what's it called? A Francesinha before a game. I was just like,
no way,
Jesus. Man, how many kids are reading that thinking, well, look, if that's what Bruno Fernandes does, then that's what I'm going to do as well. If you're eating a Francesinha before a game of football, you are certifiably insane. I will say no more about that. All right, well, let's get on with this week's podcast, because as always, there is an awful lot to cover, including games from the big three, Braga, and a massive game at the bottom of the table, a relegation six-pointer, you could call it. Of course, the first thing to say is that Sporting are playing tonight. They are playing their game in hand as we record this on Tuesday evening. We are recording before that game kicks off, so we won't be able to cover it. I think by the time we finish recording, they would have been played about half an hour, so we'll come back to this at the end. But we're only going to be able to cover the game against Gil Vicente, which we will do so very shortly. Before we kick off, though, just as always, a reminder to, if you want to support us, give us a little review on Apple Podcasts, a star rating on Spotify, share the podcast with your friends that you think might enjoy it. And of course, if you really want to get involved with what we do, you can find us on Patreon, where you can become a Long Ball Football Socio for £1 per month. Get involved with the community and help support a DIY podcast in the process. A link to that is in the description of this episode. But Barney, without further ado, let's get stuck into this week's Primeira Liga action. And we're going to start, as we always do, at the top of the table with Sporting. Now, we knew that the stakes were high for Sporting before this weekend. We knew it was going to be a huge few days for them. Two wins would put them in an incredible position at the top of the table, leading by 7 points. The only question was, would there be another twist to this season? Would they bottle it? Well, they showed absolutely zero signs of that when they beat Gil Vicente 4-0 away from home. They were 4-0 up at halftime and cruised to another victory. Amorim made some changes to the lineup as well to keep things fresh, but they didn't let up one bit and took another huge step towards the Premier League title.
Yeah, we talked about this in the previous show about how... Although the momentum was always Sporting, we felt there was a possibility that Gil Vicente, the shackles off of Vitor Capella's departure might bounce back and it cause a little bit of upset. But no, there's no sign of that ever happening.
Did we say that, Barney?
I did. I was in a roundabout way. I thought it was a possibility, but that, you know, as you said, it absolutely wasn't. And getting the early goal obviously would have helped that. And they just kept going relentless. Amorim's been speaking this week and sort of after this game and talking about the game tonight, as you mentioned, Famalicão, saying, you know, that they just don't want to give any whiff of a chance to Benfica. They just want to keep going. You know, they want to. Which they absolutely have to do. I like this out because, as you said, there was quite a rotated team. Quaresma and Diamande coming into the back line alongside Inacio. Is Gaio coming at left wing back and Jenny Catamo keeping his spot at right wing back, which was, you know, a sign of how far Catamo's come. And we talked about it a lot last week. I was looking at the mid. Oh, I do want to talk about Trincao as well in a second, but I wanted to focus on the midfield just for a little bit because Brancaccia came in again, and every time he seems to play for Sporting this season, he's making an impact. He's putting in some really good performances. You know, he's obviously had such a long spell out with his injury, and how Hjulmand and Morita looked for most of the season, it seems really hard to see a way of him coming into that team, because I feel like Hjulmand and Morita are both quite well, they how can I say this? They have their style, don't they? They seem humans, that sort of box to box. Morita's just that, I'd say, James Milner, a sort of Park Ji-sung figure who just goes about everywhere and does everything right. And then Brancaccia seems to be this sort of slight number eight with a lovely touch and a good eye for a pass. And he doesn't fit that mold of either Morita or Hjulmand. But every time he comes in, that what he offers differently in terms of sort of good on being pressed and sort of the good touch and be able to turn, he's always delivered, and that's really helped Sporting in this sort of second half of the season, having that player to come into that midfield and give some rest to Hjulmand and Morita on occasion. And that's just from watching him play out. And I wanted to sort of back all this up with some really nice statistics for this game for Brancaccia. And he had a lovely passing accuracy. Obviously, had a shot on target as well, a key pass. When I was looking at his stats, and then I just look up one above, and there's Morita, who had 91.3% pass accuracy, three aerials won, 92 touches, two key passes. Just everything was just slightly better, and a lovely reminder of what a player Morita is. I know he's 28 years old. He's not this young kid who's come through the academy. He's not their marquee signing, one of their marquee signings from the summer. But he's incredible. And yeah, I just, you know, I wanted to focus on that midfield. And Brancaccia, they've got a great player coming at a great time. But in Morita, you know, arguably the most underrated player in this league for what he offers and how consistent he is.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm constantly drawing comparisons with the title-winning season from when Amorim previously won the league with Sporting. And I think we spoke so much then about not just how it was a balanced team overall, but the midfield being such an important part of that as well. Obviously, back then it was Alinha and Matheus Nunes, which was a really, really strong midfield partnership. And this current partnership of Morita and Hjulmand is very different. That neither of those players is really like either Palhinha or Matheus Nunes. And yet still they found a pairing with real balance and a pairing that really complement each other. I'm pleased, Barney. I've just checked the lineups for the game against Famalicão. Brancaccia keeps his place in the midfield, which I like a lot. And Brancaccia was somebody that I wrote about in our Portugal preview article as one of our figures of the week to watch, because I just feel like with Brancaccia, he just needs to take his opportunity and he needs to make this his time. You know, he's not a young player anymore. He's 24 years old. He's captain Sporting on some of the occasions that he's played, and he's, despite all that, never quite got a grip of any position in that Sporting midfield. I do wonder, and Sporting fans will hate me because, you know, we'd be so positive, but if one of those two players, Hjulmand or Morita, was to leave in the summer, I think that could be a real opportunity for Daniel Brancaccia to kick on next season and show everyone that he can be a mainstay in this Sporting side for years to come. Because when he has played, like you say, this season, I think he has been excellent. And it's just another example, that midfield pairing of what Sporting have got this season, which is exactly what they had the last time they won the title, which is that balance throughout the team and players who fit every position. Even in Franco Israel, I think they've settled on a really competent keeper. So, yeah, a very, very positive win for Sporting. And the thing for me was just how the manner in which they won. You know, they completely blew away Gil Vicente in that first half. They put any doubts to rest. And, you know, when Sporting won the title for the first time in 19 years, you kind of felt at times that they were just desperate to get over the line and trying to scrape through games. Whereas what we're seeing this season is slightly different. It feels like they're playing the best they've played all season right now, and the team is in the best place it's been all season right now. And that's just, you know, for them, it's just everything's lined up perfectly.
I think the difference between that title-winning season and this season now is the level of the bench. Essentially, the lower level of this team has drastically risen, and you look at like the, you know, their defensive mid, I mean, centre back options, you know, Quaresma, Ignacio, Diamande, Reece, Coates, Senjus, you know, that's six centre backs who could arguably all be starting. They've done well to cover the wing back positions, and as we talked about that midfield and attack as well. The fact that he's been able to rotate Edwards and Trincao, although it looks like it's going to be very hard for Edwards to get back in his team at the moment, because Trincao is just looking absolutely phenomenal. And you know, we are really starting to see why Barcelona bought him. And we shouldn't forget he did earn that move when he was playing for Braga a few years ago. So, you know, and he's starting to really show that level again. Yeah, he's just absolutely brilliant. I thought Gil Vicente were just, yeah, a little disappointing. I feel like we haven't gone in depth with them very much this season. They've very, you know, just, I feel like the midfield is their biggest weakness. So we just haven't seen a strong enough midfield from them. They just don't have the players in there, really. They went to sort of, there was a few tweaks for this game, bringing in sort of Gaban, Tibor and Neto in sort of midfield three rather than going with an out-and-out 10. But that just didn't bring any extra stability that change might have done. And yeah, a few errors. I like their attacking options. There's a few decent defenders in there. And Andrew, the goalkeeper as well, is obviously a fantastic goalkeeper. But yeah, for me, their real issues have been midfield this season. And they just haven't been able to work out a good combination or have the caliber of player to sort of protect that back line when they've needed it. Yeah,
I think it is worth just a quick sort of general overview on Gil Vicente, because like many teams that end up more in the middle of the table, we don't find a lot of opportunities to talk about them. This result left them 14th in the table. They're only 1 point above the relegation playoff spot. It's a very, very congested part of the table. As you mentioned, they sacked their manager, Vitor Campelos. They've replaced him with Tazay Mareco, 36-year-old Portuguese manager. He took Tondela to fifth place in the Segunda Liga table this season. I'm sure Gil Vicente will have high hopes of him being the next exciting young manager who's going to take them to exciting places. But first, they have to survive in the Primeira Liga, and that's not exactly certain at the moment. If I was making a change as Gil Vicente manager with five games to go, I'd be looking at someone who is going to guarantee me stability. I don't think you have to do an awful lot, if we're being honest, to survive in the Premier League from the position that they're in, because there are not many teams that can overtake them. You just simply have to avoid any disasters, not getting dragged sort of 6 points below them into the automatic relegation playoff, trying your best not to end up being that team that have got to play the relegation playoff, because as we've seen every year since the relegation playoff was introduced, the Segunda Liga team has won it every season. But for Gil Vicente, their job is far from done in the league this season, and they really have to keep their nerve, keep fighting, keep battling, and picking up a few points here and there. Obviously, a game like this, really difficult to get any points in, and they can ultimately just write off this game as the only game in between sacking Vitor Campelos and hiring Tazay Mareco. So a bit of a write-off. The next five games are going to be huge for them, as it is going to be for any team around them in their position. Lastly, Barney, one sort of sad aspect of this game that I did just want to touch on was, of course, Juventus goalkeeper Andrew, who played in goal. And after the game, we learned that he'd only very, very shortly before the game, I believe even maybe the day before, his mother had passed away. Obviously, a really tragic event, and our condolences go to him and his family. And of course, it was presented as quite a touching story. I just couldn't help but think that perhaps it was a situation where someone at the club should have taken that decision out of his hands. Obviously, he would have seen it as a display of commitment, you know, for such a young player, it shows real strength and leadership to do that. But I do have to say, I think he should have been protected by someone more senior at the club and that decision taken out of his hands, because I think he did struggle during the game as well, which was really, really difficult to see and didn't really help things.
Yeah, no, he's a vital player for Juve, and you know, he's one of the best goalkeepers in the league. And I couldn't have imagined doing what he did, but perhaps he, you know, he's like I say, he's a vital player to that team, so maybe he felt the need to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about another game and go into second place, where we talk about Benfica, who also made some big changes as they look ahead to a much more important Europa League game against Marseille, where they currently lead 2-1 on aggregate. They brought in Carrera, Chamorro, and Thomas Araujo into defence, as well as Samuel Suarez in goal. Kotchu made the return to the starting 11 after his spell on the naughty step, and Thiago Gouveia made a rare start on the wing. After the disappointment of last weekend's league game against Sporting, the whole club needed a big boost. And they did that first with a great win in Europa League, which puts them one game away from a European Cup semi-final. And then this result in the league, which saw a number of fringe players get some valuable minutes, some goals for young players. And I think it was a real morale boost for everyone at the club, really.
Yeah, I mean, there was real heavy rotation, something we haven't really seen from Schmidt. But as you say, obviously rely an eye on the Europa League for them in this coming up. I thought Poshu in that number 10 role just looked far better than he has been in you know, playing in a slightly deeper role. He obviously got rewarded with his goal. Just played so well. Gouveia as well on that left hand side coming in. With Neres moving to the right hand side, so he could come inside. They're both just such dynamic. They're it's quite a frightening prospect actually. Them two, you know, if Gouveia from last season when he was at Estoril, you know, I was so excited about him and how he might progress this year. Obviously, he's been very hard for him to get into the team ahead of the likes of Di Maria. But he was, you know, two assists in this game. So much pace, and same with Neres. Neres has always just looked so good. I was quite keen to see Álvaro Fernández. I've been struggling on. I thought he's called Álvaro Fernández, but you've been called, what's his in the back of his shirt? It's
Carreras. The kid from Man U, the left back.
Yeah. And reports, because he hasn't had many minutes, although I did see reports last week that they're going to activate the purchase option, which I think is around 6 million euros. He looked all right, obviously a bit more of a, I'd say, direct attacking fullback compared to when Alsnes is playing there. I think the passing wasn't as good as Alsnes, obviously. But he, you know, a few clever touches, and he seems to go by you know, fairly well with Gouveia. So, you know, that's an interesting one if they decide to keep him, because I've also seen reports of them rumoured of other left-backs, but, you know, there's always going to be rumours around Benfica. Araújo is the one, Albert, Thiago Araújo at the back, who I just absolutely love. And I feel like there's a lot of Benfica fans who love him as well. And I wonder, because he was on loan at Juventus last season, where he played phenomenally well, hasn't had many opportunities, you know, and he's basically playing in, would like to play in Antonio Silva's spot or Otamendi's. I thought he might be out the door. I thought, you know, because he's not exactly young. I think he's about 22 now. But I'm starting to lean towards the idea that, you know, he could be replacing Otamendi. You know, I just think that Benfica have been really smart there, because quite often we see the players from the B team go out on loan, perhaps don't work their way into the team and then get shipped out somewhere. You know, look at the likes of Paolo Bernardo at Celtic, for example, or you know, Jota, who as well, who went to Celtic. But with Araújo, I think there's a real potential there for him to be the Otamendi replacement, because he's once again one of these young players that every time he's had an opportunity, he's a really good, you know, good pace, great on the ball. Yeah, I really like him.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope they do keep him. I think they're more likely to get to lose Antonio Silva in the summer than Otamendi. So I think, yeah, I think Araújo definitely is in the limited opportunities that he's had, because that's exactly what it is, limited opportunities. He's shown real quality. And I think it's just hard for a player like him who finds himself in between, where he's probably too good to go out on loan again to another mid-table Premier League club. Benfica probably don't want to loan him to a team like Benfica, to Braga, sorry, because they see them as too close a rival. They probably don't really want to send him abroad either. And so he's still part of the squad, but not really getting many minutes, which I think possibly will change next season with Antonio Silva likely to move. One thing we were talking about last week, Barney, with Roger Schmidt, was whether or not basically it was the end of the road for him, and whether he'd couldn't do any more with this squad, perhaps, or couldn't do any more at Benfica. But I think what I liked about this game, with some of these young players coming in, I mean, Rolheiser coming on and scoring, we've barely seen him this season. Araújo playing well, Gouveia playing well, young kid Diogo Spencer coming off the bench, and hopefully finishing the season on a high, in Europe at least. Do you think that we're now looking at an opportunity for Roger Schmidt to kind of wrestle back some of that positivity about his own ability to lead Benfica going into another season? Because I have felt that there's now kind of almost this sense that Roger Schmidt now needs to prove that he can lead Benfica for another season, that he is the man to kind of bring back the good times at Benfica and be the one to lead them to another league title and kind of align all these top players that they've got and the young players they've got in the academy and all that stuff, because that's more what we've had from Schmidt this season, the sense that he's lost his grip on Benfica a little bit, and perhaps there wasn't the confidence in him that he was going to be the one to carry on leading the club.
Yeah, I think they'll. I find it harder. I think the Europa League is obviously a huge competition. If they were to do really well in that, perhaps get to the final, which they've got quite a strong chance of doing, that would obviously boost his credibility. I've just felt there's been quite a disconnect between him and the fans, which hasn't. I don't know. That always seems to be there, but the way he talks in his post-match press conferences, he's quite dismissive of much criticism from the fan base, which I don't think is ever a good sign for a manager. Yeah, I mean we it seems like we're sometimes it seems like we're too quick to sort of forget how good he was last season and how good this Benfica team was, and they're largely still there. You've also got to look at we can. Quite often we're quick to praise Amorim for the development of youth players, but João Neves and Antonio Silva have been, would arguably be the two biggest exports from this league if they were to leave, fetching the biggest sums. The way they've come on and developed is he deserves a lot of credit for that. There'll still be lots of questions about some of his squad selection, I think, and that there are some issues that you look at the striking position, but it's a. Yeah, I think perhaps there's two ways you can think about it, isn't there? Because we've mentioned a few times, there's a possibility that all three of the top three managers could leave this summer, and who you can get in to replace them, and who would be attracted to this job. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, we shouldn't forget that Roger Schmidt is quite a highly touted manager, and that. That was quite not an achievement for Benfica, but a very exciting appointment from Benfica when he did arrive. So, but you need to bear that in mind as well. But I'll go back to my original point. I think the Europa League, I think for me, is the one where, going really deep in that is vitally important for Schmidt. Justin Roeselier, you mentioned, who came on and got his goal. It was really nice to see friend of the show Nino Torres get the Portuguese press for his. Description of the Roeselier goal. Did he call him like the golden boy or something like that? Which I like, getting the reference to his blonde hair. I thought that was great. Really, really good.
I mean, we know Nino's obsession with Game of Thrones, so he had to find a Game of Thrones character. We said in our preview show, Brian, in the Patreon exclusive preview show, when we looked ahead to this game, that Morens would be hard to beat. Well, they weren't that hard to beat, as it turns out. Their keeper did make some good saves, but look, ultimately they were pretty left behind in this game, and perhaps I think they'll be a bit disappointed that they didn't make a better show of themselves, just because, you know, Benfica were a bit wounded and they had rotated a lot of the squad, and perhaps there would have been an opportunity there to make a bit more of a mark on the game, because I think, if I'm being honest, I think they were a bit anonymous.
Yeah, it's disappointing really, because they're sort of back to, well, in my opinion, their strongest team in the midfield of Franco and Afori, and of Alanzino in the number 10, and Camacho and Kodisang on the wing. You know, that for me was the team that came up, and the team that sort of started pretty well. I thought Franco had moments, and so, as did Afori, but they sort of lost it in midfield, I felt, and that's partly due to, I think, the, you know, that trio of João Mário, Neves and Kosciu in the 10, that really helped Benfica. Yeah, and I feel like I always fall back on this answer, Albert, for Morens' sort of downward form in the second half of the season. But for me, it is still quite simple, the departure of André Luiz. You know, they haven't got any sort of caliber of striker to replace them. They went with Vinicius Mignotti. They've got Luis Assu, who started a few times, a striker on him from Braga. I think they've tried almost all four of their striking options as well, but, you know, none of them are performing. And, you know, that sort of doubles down on the fact that André Luiz is still their top goal scorer, despite leaving for China in the January window with just 6 goals. You know, everyone else below that has got, Alan's got 3, João Camacho's got 3, you know, Maracas, the centre-back's got 2 goals. You know, they really are quite toothless without André Luiz, and that's been a real issue for them.
Yeah, a bit unfortunate for them that Portugal's coefficient ranking means that they probably won't get the Conference League spot that in previous years they would have been rewarded with, because it's been a decent season for Moreirense. But yeah, they're not really troubling the top 5-6 as we thought they might be at a certain point this season. Let's move on and talk about Porto, Barney. Now, there was further upset at Porto as they failed to win for their third consecutive league game by drawing 2-2 at home with Famalicão. Twice, Porto had to come from behind, tie the game, and couldn't find a much-needed winner in the second half, which meant they had to settle for 1 point in 3 games. Now, unfortunately, it does seem like this period of instability that both Porto and Sergio Conceição are going through is continuing, as we had some interesting post-game comments from Conceição, particularly one where he said they want to put the North region out of sporting success in Portugal and Europe. We will come on to those comments later. Firstly, Barney, a word on the game, which was a game, in my opinion, dominated by one man, Jean de Cadiz. I think his journey at Famalicão has been really interesting, because at times he's been almost ridiculed for not scoring, for being a bit useless. At other times, he's looked like perhaps one of the better strikers outside the big clubs. He's currently in a great run of form at the moment, and his 2 goals in this game were really well taken, particularly the first, really powerful header.
Yeah, I mean, he's quite a presence, and as you say, when he's been on form, he has looked really dangerous. I think obviously that relationship with Gustavo Sá, who got one of the assists, has been really good. That's been building and got better, and Sarr was great in this game as well, getting lots of space, drifting out right wide, and Puma as well, an excellent winger who has had his injuries this season, but, you know, I feel like if he'd stayed fit, we could have seen a lot more from him. He looks great as well. It's interesting because I was looking at the centre-back partnership for this game of Zé Pedro and Otávio, who's I think they've only played, I'm not sure, that this might have been the first time that they've played together. Perhaps they played once before, but I saw a statistic of the various centre back combinations that Conceição has used this season, and though some have played far more than others, you know, even including there was David Carmo in these statistics. There was a few, those the two players who sort of seemed to, whoever they were playing with, have the most green percentage wise was Otávio and Zé Pedro. So, you know, this was, I was like, oh, this could work. But Yeah, unfortunately, it didn't quite, because everybody said Cadiz seems to have quite a lot of joy. I don't know. It just sort of just shows that, that there's they've also have had their frailties this season, and Famalicão did well in this game to sort of highlight those and take advantage, because yeah, Cadiz isn't the he's like he is in a good form, but he's not the best striker in this league, and he's not like the most dangerous player. But two goals in this game is great for him.
I mean, if anyone's not seen it or maybe you didn't notice, the thing I love about Cadiz's first goal, excuse me, not only it was a great header, but he also sets up the whole move with a brilliant long crossfield ball from just inside the Porto half and then races to get in the box and gets on the end of the cross. So it's really good football. There were some changes to the Porto lineup, Barney, and even Jaime and Jorge Sanchez were both given starts, along with a couple of other players. I think it's fair to say that Conceição wasn't happy with their contribution, as it now emerges that both those players have been relegated to training with the B team alongside Andre Franco and Tony Martinez. Although maybe this is slightly controversial, but based on the performances of those two players I mentioned first, Jorge Sanchez and even Jaime, I'm not sure whether he might have a point, and I don't want to single out those two players, but I think they were pretty emblematic of a big problem that I'm seeing with Porto's players right now, which is a lack of commitment on the field. I think too many times it was too easy for Famalicão on the ball. They were not challenged enough. The defenders were not aggressive enough. The press wasn't strong enough. Famalicão had so many chances in the first half where they were just able to pass the ball around fairly easy and get into dangerous positions. I didn't think the centre backs were that bad, if I'm being honest. I think that the issue came from the rest of the team not being committed enough to stifling Famalicão, and this underdog team were able to come to the Dragão and really have quite a comfortable game, especially in the first half. I definitely saw it from Jorge Sanchez multiple times, and I thought he could have done a lot better to prevent Famalicão's second goal. For anyone who's not seen it, I think it's worth checking out the highlights, because he basically gives up on running back to stop a cross. Seems like pretty basic stuff, although I don't play at that level, so maybe it's harder than it looks. But in general, I think, because there's been so much chaos around Porto at the moment, and we've been talking about so much off the field stuff, I wanted to really just look at the football and see what is it that is meaning they're losing these games. And we talked about in the past games about maybe losing their heads. But in this game, I think there were a lot of players who, when you really looked at them, they lacked that hunger and they lacked that edge that they need. Maybe other than just Chico Conceição, who once again, I single him out for being a committed player, but I think there's quite a few Porto players who, while they might get upset with referees and angry at stuff, really maybe they should be looking at their own performance, because I think there's a lot of players kind of playing at just even 80%, 90%, just 10% off it, which means they're really in trouble in a lot of games.
Yeah, I do agree with you, Albert, in sort of what transpired on the pitch. I feel bad that I'll then take it back to sort of off the pitch reasons as to why this might have been. But I do feel like in Ivan Jamie and Jorge Sanchez is he's on loan from
Ajax.
Ajax. I think there was talk before around winter time that they might be sending him back. He's very much just, for me, he was just a sort of last minute signing just to sort of fill a hole, add a bit of cover. How that would motivate an individual, I don't know. Ivan Jamie, I would imagine as well, came for a big sum, has had limited opportunities, and the reason I'm sort of taking it to off the pitch antics out is because something you talked about last week is Conceição's man of management. I just don't think these players are motivated. They're frustrated, and for lack of minutes, I think Ivan Jamie could have perhaps feeling his right to have had a lot more time than he has on the pitch for Porto. But I think what I'm trying to say, and I, because I don't want to throw it all on Conceição, because I think you're right that that you can have poor man management for manager, but you can also have poor attitude on the pitch, which is never excusable. But I do think that we've been talking about Sporting's strength and depth and Benfica's, rotating squads here, and there's players coming in who are hungry to perform and to sort of try and fight for a place, if you will. We just don't see that at Porto, or we haven't this season really, because I think when you do look at the games where they've dropped points, and Contrasel said himself this week, he considers a draw a loss in this league. When that has happened, it has usually been with not his starting 11 coming in. I find it very interesting to see what happens next week with Evan Nilsson getting the red card and who he might start. I feel like we should have seen perhaps a lot more of Taremi than we have this season, in hindsight with these recent poor results. And that's another example of, could you imagine Contrasel fielding a team without Taremi this time last year? No. What's changed? Taremi's not extending his contract. He's going to leave on the free. And when that sort of got announced, that's when he sort of fell out of favour in the team. That's another decision made by Contrasel. It's a hard one, because I think you're right to try and keep it and focus it on the performances on the pitch. For me, in the back of my head, I feel like the reason that those performances are as bad as they are is perhaps not getting the motivation from the manager.
100%. And this is probably a bigger conversation for another time. Maybe we'll be talking about this more after the season's finished, when we're doing a season review or something like that. But those four players that I just mentioned, Jorge Sanchez, even Jaime, not Fran Navarro,
Andre
excuse
Frank.
me, Andre Franco, and Tony Martinez, along with players like Fran Navarro. How many of those players are Porto signings? I think we've seen, excuse me, Sergio Conceição signings, because we've seen Porto have a kind of transfer policy of picking up players who have done well outside of the big three and four in Portugal. Players like those four, Andre Franco, remember, came from Estoril. I think people were a bit surprised by that signing, and maybe it was just Porto going, well, we'll take a player who's done well below and see what he can do. Even Jaime as well, we've done well at Famalicão. Fran Navarro, could you put David Carmo in that bracket? Probably that's a bit harsh, but there's been a lot of signings that haven't worked out under Sergio Conceição. A lot of signings that have. I mean, Mehdi Taremi, the biggest of all of them, a player who did well at Rio Ave, was signed and became a, one of the best strikers that we've seen in the Premier League in the last 10 years. But yeah, this is probably a discussion for another time. But it just seems to be a repeating factor that players sign from within the league. A lot of them don't seem to work out under Conceição.
Can I just make one quick point on that before we move on? It's just that one thing that I haven't perhaps considered enough before is obviously there is a financial difference between the clubs in this league and but perhaps there's also a standard difference from between clubs in this league. And when these players have arrived at Porto, and perhaps, and obviously the reason behind a lot of Porto's success in recent years has been the standards that Sergio Conceição has demanded of his players, and when they've had successes, when every single one of those players is meeting those standards, we're perhaps just seeing a period of time where the players that they've signed, as you mentioned, from within the league, are just not able to make that jump or are not used to that standard, and then getting the poor treatment from Conceição and blah blah blah. But I think what you were trying to do and what I haven't quite tried to do is try not to just whack it all in Contrasao again, because there are other factors at play, and we can't always just blame the manager for poor performances on the pitch.
That said, shall we just end on that quote that I read out earlier on? After the game, Sergio Conceição gave his post-match interview, in which one of his quotes was, and you have to forgive me because this is obviously translated from Portuguese to English. He said, "They, not sure who he means by they want to put the northern region out of sporting success in Portugal and Europe." Essentially, Conceição suggesting in his post-match interview after this draw against Famalicão, that there's a agenda against clubs from the north in Portugal, that they don't want northern clubs to be the ones who are successful either within the league or in Europe. Now, I will just start this by saying, as someone from the capital city of the country that I'm from, that I'm totally open to the prospect that there is subconscious bias in society, culture, politics, whatever it is, towards capital city. It happens. I'm not disregarding that. I'm not disregarding that. Perhaps that undoubtedly Porto as a city is probably looked on as secondary to the capital, Lisbon. I think it is outrageous for Sergio Conceição to try and use that agenda to excuse the poor results that his Porto team are having. For one, Porto does not represent the north of Portugal. There are many, many other clubs in the north who are having very relative, who have varying degrees of relative success. For example, Porto just drew to Famalicão, another northern team, a team more north than Porto, for whom going to the Estádio Dragão and getting a draw is a success. The Premier League itself is dominated by teams from a very small part of the north of Portugal. Portuguese football in general has many more teams from the north region in the top 2-3 divisions than any other region in Portugal. Braga, similarly, are a team from the north of Portugal who played in the Champions League last year. All the teams, Barney, that we've seen qualify for the Europa Conference League over the years, Arouca, Vitória, Gil Vicente, Rio Ave, they're all northern teams. You know, we saw Braga, a northern team, win the first piece of silverware in the league this season. Porto themselves are up against Vitória in the semi-finals of the Taça de Portugal. What is this guy talking about? It's absolutely, I'm sorry, this is possibly the biggest meltdown we've seen from Conceição. I think this comment is, like, not only is it outrageous that he's trying to use this to excuse his results, it's so tone deaf as well, and it's so wrong.
Yeah, it's just getting quite ugly now and almost a little pathetic, to be honest. It's not nice to see, and I feels like, I think, what was the news that came out this week, that they failed some FFP regulations with UEFA, so there's a threat of them not being being left out of UEFA competitions if they don't pay a quite a significant fine, up to about around
2 million, I think.
2 million euros. You know, so there's real issues there. I think a lot will come down to the presidential vote hour, which is towards the end of April. And seeing who wins that, because it goes. There's a part of me that I can imagine Conceição being here next year, and like, it just wouldn't surprise me. Even though, you know, if he does stay here, and even if a few players do come, it still feels like it's just not. I just can't. Yeah, it would be a real shame if it does end like this, and he's reaching for all these sort of, you know, trying to get any excuse in there. It would just be a real shame, because it doesn't feel nice criticizing so much when he's done so much good. And sort of go
exactly
back to the little point where I made earlier, I do, you know, a lot of Portuguese, it has been the real high standards that he's demanded. And I do think perhaps it has been a shock for some of those players, but, you know, you've got to try and reach those standards. But then, you know, we're talking about standards and he's doing that. So yeah, there you go.
Let's stop talking about Sergio Conceição and talk about another game of football. There was a team, Barney, that took advantage of Porto's draw. Of course, that was Braga. That got in a 1-0 away win at Estoril. Good way to bounce back from their 3-0 home loss to Arouca the previous week. One thing we spoke a lot about in that game was how Braga looked a bit lost after losing Arthur Jorge without an immediate replacement. This time, I think we saw a much more cohesive team, which was definitely the most important thing.
Yeah, good to see the likes of Álvaro Jallo coming back into the team, getting his goal. Roger's sort of been filling in that right midfield role, but he's, despite the fact that he's leaving, you know, he's been a really important player for Braga this year. and he's been probably their best performer when he's been on song. Ricardo Horta as well, coming back, a player that we perhaps haven't talked about enough in sort of being absent from this team of injury, you know, and how key a player he has been, and what a big loss, and how that would have clearly affected them. Yeah, seeing this 11 and seeing, well, get out a decent win against Estoril, who we shouldn't forget helped Porto draw the week before, and have got, you know, are looking to get big results and are improving. You know, this is the perfect stabilising performance, I'd say, because, you know, while, you know, they've still got a chance to nick third spot, they've still got Vitória hot on their heels. You know, they needed to bounce back from their poor performance last week. I wanted to talk about Paulo Oliveira, but the centre back, the 32-year-old centre back, I was just looking at his stats there to see, because he's had a few injuries. He hasn't consistently been in the team this season, but the stats aren't there to sort of say when he's in the team they perform better. But I do feel like they perhaps have looked their strongest defensively when he has been in that back line. I think that experience has helped them. And you know, it's just sort of a reminder that you can't really go with as well as that inexperienced back four played an occasion individually. I think collectively, and even Borja coming at left back, you know, that extra bit of experience, I think, has helped Braga this season in that particularly defensively.
I mean, the most important thing for Braga right now is not letting this season go, because they've got a real opportunity to finish in third place. And I think that's, you know, I'm sorry, I'm saying exactly the same thing that we discussed on last week's show, but it was so strange to see them make a decision around their manager with such a vital part of the season to go. They're now equal on points with Porto, 59 points each in third place. Neither team is going to get second. It's all about grabbing third place, which is a Europa League spot guaranteed. I don't think it's a qualifier spot, but you know, that's so big for both of these clubs. You know, neither of them wants to be playing Conference League football next season, really, although it would be a much more winnable tournament for both of those teams. But look, you know, they have five games left. They've got an opportunity to overtake Porto. Just don't throw away the season now. That's what it's started to frustrate me. But like you say, there are positive signs both in this game and with the kind of players that they've got coming back into the team, that they can make a good fist of the last five games. I wanted to ask you about Estoril, and whether you think they're showing signs of improvement, because, you know, like Gil Vicente that we were talking about at the beginning of the show, Estoril team hovering just above that relegation playoff place, a precarious position to be in. It would not be difficult for them to get sucked into that 16th spot. It's a team that we've seen be very up and down this season. They seem to have settled into a bit more of a kind of average performance level. Not fantastic, although defensively they look stronger than they have in recent weeks. I'm hoping personally that they are turning a bit of a corner, and you know, there's obviously no real prospects for them this season other than just maintaining their position in Premier League for next year.
Yeah, the defensive is key for them, really, because they were so poor, shipping so many goals. We mentioned João Basso coming in, but Pedro Álvaro and Bernardo Vitor seem to have upped their performances in with him coming into the back line. Another player as well, Wagner. I always go to say Wagner in that way, the German way. I don't know why, but it's. Or is it right, Wagner Pina, the right wing back, who's 21-year-old Portuguese right wing back, who sort of has filled in on the rare occasion in the absence of Rodrigo Gomes, who obviously didn't play in this game because he was being on loan from Braga. But there's also been a few games recently where Pina's played and allowing Rodrigo Gomes to play further up. But I think that natural right back coming into that back line has also helped them slightly as well, to sort of balance that out. They're improving the midfield partnership of Mateus Fernandes and Zanicello as well, is looking very good. One thing I'm going to say, Albert, I don't know if you agree, is because Rafi Gaitán We've raved about him so much the first half of the season. He's still like top of the leaderboards for, dribbles completed, as by a ridiculous amount, despite not playing quite regularly the second half of the season. The only thing I was going to say about it is just, is that all he does? Do you know what I mean? Like,
He's a dribble merchant.
he's a dribble merchant, but no end product. I don't know. Just because in terms of goals and assists, not much to report. But then there's, that's the only time I really see him now in the last few months has been just when I see looking at dribbling statistics, and there he is.
No, I'm less worried about that. I think, I think he has proven he's got great end product. I think it's difficult for a player like Gitan in a team like Estoril, because it's hard to shine every week in a team that's struggling ultimately. And I think if I have one criticism, not criticism, if I have one negative perspective on his season, I think he has kind of gone a bit missing this second part of the season. And if his aim for the season was to secure himself a big move to a big club, then he's got to keep his performance levels high, because it's easy to be forgotten about. It's not easy to make a name for yourself in the Premier League or outside one of the top four clubs. So he probably would have wanted a few more goal and assist stats to make his season look a bit better. Anybody who has watched him can see the quality that he's got. So I'm not too worried in that sense. But yeah, perhaps he has just let his season fizzle out a little bit. But yeah, he'll be really a player who's really interesting to keep an eye on what they're up to next season, whether it's in Portugal or abroad. Barney, I think we've got time for one more game, and there's only one other game that we're going to talk about this week. A massive game in the relegation battle, as 17th placed Vizela hosted 18th placed Chaves in the definition of a six-pointer. Both teams really running out of time now to save their seasons. Both teams desperate for a win. And it was Chaves who were able to grab an invaluable 1-0 away win and leapfrog Vizela into 7th place. Chaves do remain 5 points behind Porto Belenenses in 16th with 5 games to play. But you sensed if they lost this game, it would really be game over for the whole season. For Vizela, it was a missed opportunity where a win would have put them just 3 points behind Porto Belenenses. But now it really does look like they have a mountain to climb.
Yeah, yeah, it was not the game to lose.
No.
We were sort of saying before that, that could have been a real, well, get a win here against Chaves, and you could have real had some hope of sort of pushing for that playoff spot. Just I thought it was, I just didn't. I was so disappointed. I feel like when De La Brera first came in, there was sort of quite a lot of positive talk about the way he was playing and the football he wanted to sort of to play, and then it feels like they've just been regressing since the start. Ascend and Petrov, strikers who have proven that they can score, particularly Ascend, but that their serve has sort of dried up. They're not creating it, not getting the chances that they need. I don't like his midfield selection. And this was the game to make things happen, and they didn't do it. Whereas for Moreno and Shabs, they turned up. The goal was sort of forced from, was it Nkwali, player sort of coming back to the midfield who hasn't played enough in my opinion recently, but making a difference. João Correa as well, playing left wing, but he's a right back or right wing back, and he's
Is he the
played.
number 77, Barney? Mate, he finishes like a fucking right back. This is gonna be one of my points. I don't want to shit on a player like that, but oh my God, how many opportunities did he have to score? I'm so relieved that Shavs won the game, but he had about four goal scoring opportunities. He didn't take any. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's fine, because the point I was going to make about him is that I just think he's proved to be a really important player for them. Playing in a number of positions, sometimes being asked to do the defensive role, sometimes being asked to do the attacking role, but works really hard. I if they go well, if they go down, I expect to see him come back up with another team, because he's been top draw. But no, the centre backs are, but Nogueira and Fernandes, Souza in goal had another good game. They stepped up, they defended really well. Really limited Vizela's chances, and they needed to, you know, this is, it feels like a performance we've been demanding from Chavs all season, and they, you know, maybe it's too little too late, but you know, the important thing is they turned up in this game.
I don't know what Vizela's game plan was in this game. Well, I don't know what they were thinking in the first half, because they were ridiculously open at the back. Xavi's counted on them multiple times. And you know, if Vizela had been playing a half decent team playing that way, they would have been 3-0 down at half time. They did obviously get things a bit together in the second half, but I to be honest, man, I was really disappointed with Vizela in this game, because they just didn't play well enough in a big game, such an important game for them. I think we have to be honest about the situation. Anyone who listened to our preview show, the Patreon preview show, when we talked about this, probably would have sensed that we almost wanted Vizela to win. And I think that was the case. Not because I particularly have any bias towards Vizela over Shavs in this game, but you really felt like if either of these teams had a chance to survive, it was Vizela. And if they were to win this game, like I said, they would have been 3 points off the playoff. That's a real opportunity to survive. Let's be honest, man. Even though Shavs won this game, they're still a bit too far away. So it almost just feels a bit like a wasted win, if that makes sense. I don't want to offend any Shavs fans listening, but from a neutral point of view, you know, only one of these teams really had an opportunity to escape, and it was Vizela. And they just played so poorly; it wasn't good enough. Like you, I've got the same concerns about the squad selection. He's going with the two up front, and I question the two up front. I question whether forgive me, what's the other striker?
Petrov.
Petrov. It's not that I don't think they're not both good players, but it just seems like the manager wants to just have two strikers on the pitch because he thinks it will score them more goals. Essend was scoring plenty of goals up there by himself, and I don't think it's necessarily working playing them as a partnership. I think you lose Essend by doing that, and I think it's been a bit of a waste. Anyway, I do just want to ask, you know, if you think that either of these clubs have a chance to stay up. Just for some context, Shavs, with 5 games left to play, Shavs still have Porto and Sporting to play, right? Which means they basically only have 3 games where they can get a win. I would say they need to win 3 games, right? They're 5 points behind. Porto and Enns realistically in 5 games are going to get more than 3 points, you imagine, probably. So they've got to win three and really hope for a miracle in one of the other games to even have a slight chance of getting into the playoff spot. For me, it's a stretch too far. Now, Vizela, I've got Braga, Rio Ave, Boavista, Moreirense, and Estrela Amadora. Again, I would say they need at least 3 wins from those 5 games. Maybe I think they could do it with 8 points. It's such a, you know, it's really, really, I mean, I'm just laying this all out there so people can kind of get an idea of the run-in. You know, they are really quite far adrift now from even the relegation playoff place. And I know it's not mathematically done yet, but you know, I'm not sure whether we said it or whether I just thought it before our previous show, but this was the sort of game where a draw helped no one, and even a win for Shavs didn't really help anyone. The only result in this game that would have really led to either of these teams surviving was a Vizela win, and we didn't get it. So I think this is probably the point where we say goodbye to both these teams.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree, Albert. Yeah, I think the only thing I would say is you know, this feels like the performance we've been wanting from Shavs in a while. You know, by the solidity and you know, if they can build on that, it's a big if. I can't see it because yeah, the running seems too hard. Yeah, it's so, you know, just looking at those players in both those teams and just it feels sad that I see so much quality and you look at other teams who are slightly higher up, but it feels like both of them shouldn't be where they are with the resources they've got. But yeah, it's been a longer season for both of them, and this was yeah maybe perhaps the final battle. And yeah, it just I can't see anything coming out of it. No, I can't.
I mean, if they did, it would be incredible. So fingers crossed for a great escape from one of those two teams. God knows we would love it for the end of season drama. All right, I think that is the last game we've got time to discuss on this week's podcast. Me and Barney are off to record our weekly Patreon exclusive preview show. You might have heard us referencing it a few times during this show. It's a weekly bonus podcast for all our Patreon subscribers where we preview all the upcoming Primera Liga action. We talk about every single game that's coming up at the weekend, something we don't have time to do on this show. So if you want to hear more of us discussing Portuguese football, definitely check out the link in the description of this episode where you can become a Long Ball Football Podcast socio for just £1 a month. But with that, I think it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.